You're listening to another great Torah class, recorded by TorahAnytime.com.
It's a great schus to have been invited by Rabbi Brody. I thank the Rosh Hashiva as well, and all the staff for inviting me, and I hope that we'll be able to be inspired together. All of us know that we're counting Sfira, and there's a very famous kasha. Why do we not say a bracha shechiyonu when we first start counting Sfira? Every single mitzvah that we do every once in a while, like achilas matzah, reading the Megillah, sitting in the sukkah, we always say shechiyonu for a mitzvah that comes periodically. So why don't we say shechiyonu? So there are two great terutzim to that question. One of the terutzim is literally, if you open up the Masechta Pesachim at the end, you look at the last run of Pesachim, he says a gevaldige teretz. And he says like this, Shelo matzinu bircha zman ela bedova sheyesh bo shum hanoa. You only make a shechiyonu when you do a mitzvah that you have pleasure. For example, you're sitting in the sukkah, you're eating matzah, reading the Megillah. Purim is a very festive time. But over here, what happens is, Sfira sa'aymer, ein bo zeicha l'shum hanoa. Imagine somebody's counting Sfira. He says, we're going to count Sfira sa'aymer. Oyvei, there's no Beis HaMikdash. We're not bringing the Aymer. That's terrible. There's no Beis HaMikdash. So every time you say the bracha, Sfira sa'aymer, a person, in a sense, if he would really think of what he's saying, would feel a tinge of sadness. So that's why we don't say shechiyonu. And in my humble opinion, I believe that because of this run, that's the reason why. What are the first words that you say after you tell Sfira? Harachman hu yachzir lanu tzavodes beis hamikdash. Where does that come from? You know what I think? I think it comes from the run. In other words, the run is telling us we don't say shechiyonu. Why? Because there's a sadness. Because we don't feel over here happy because we don't have the beis hamikdash. So right away we say harachman hu yachzir lanu tzavodes beis hamikdash. Let's get the beis hamikdash back, and that'll rejoice and bring us back to happiness. That's one teretz. The Bnei Yisrael has a totally different teretz, and he says like this. The Bnei Yisrael says, you know why we don't have a shechiyonu? Because this is only a preparation. Ki ein hachuka al hayomim hanisporim. The most important thing over here are not the days that are being counted, Rak al hayomim she'acha yimei hasfira. These are the days after Sfira, on Shavuos, when we've reached that level, which we're going to talk about. When we reach that level, then we say shechiyonu v'kimonu v'kiyonu l'zman hazeh, because we came to that holy day of Shavuos. So that's why there's no shechiyonu. You know why? Because it's only a preparation. It's only hachana. And I'll tell you something amazing. Rav Aaron Kotler asks an amazing kasha. He says, why did the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, why did they die during the Yemei HaSfira? Imagine, he doesn't say this, but I'm just adding a drop to it. Imagine if they would have died in Aseres Yemei Tshuva. Imagine everybody would say, you got to do Tshuva, Shalom Nobu COVID, because they didn't give COVID. Everybody got to do Tshuva before Yom Kippur. Or if they died in Elul, everybody would have a Shmuz. Before Rosh Hashanah, you got to do COVID, Zelazeh. Why did they die in Sfira? And he gives a fabulous, fabulous teretz. And he says, you know why they died? The Gemara tells us in Yevamah Samach Beis Amad Beis, because Shalom Nogu Kovay Zebazeh. And he says, if you take a look at the sixth Perik in Avos, it tells us there are 48 ways to be Kaina Taira. And one of the ways, according to the Gersois, is Dibuk Haverim, being a good friend, being close with other people, recognizing the good that people do, validating, making another person feel special. That's one of the 48 ways of being Makabel Taira. And if they didn't do that, they cannot be the ones that are transmitting Torah to the next generation. That's why they died during Sfira. Because Hashem wanted to teach us a lesson. It's not only the big Talmud Chacham who could be a Rebbe. You need a Rebbe who's a great guy, who makes every Talmud feel special. Somebody can't give over Torah just because they're brilliant. That's not what it's all about. We have to learn in these 49 days, Derech Eretz Kodma LaTorah. That's what he's talking about. That's what Rav Aaron says. That's why they died at this time. You know why? They died because they are the ones to teach us that you cannot transmit Torah unless you're a wonderful person. You have a lev toiv. As a matter of fact, as we'll talk later, you know what the Bnei Yisoscha says? It's unbelievable. He says, why 49 days? Why not 59 days? Why not 39 days? He says, because there's a mission of Ovos that says, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked all those Talmidim, what's the best midah to have? And Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch said, lev toiv, have a good heart. Lev is begamatria 32. Toiv is begamatria 17. 32 and 17 is 49. That's why we need lev toiv. That's why it's 49 days. Because we got to get a lev toiv. So I want to tell you a fabulous story. Now, this is not a Jewish story, but it's a great story. And we're going to learn an expression today that you will never, ever forget for the rest of your life, and you're going to use it forever. This is a story about a jet fighter pilot named Captain Charlie Plumb, P-L-U-M-B. And he was a jet fighter pilot during the Vietnam War. And he was on this big warship called the Kitty Hawk. And he flew 74 sorties. That means he flew 74 missions. He had one more to fly. In 5 days, he was going to come back to America. And on the 75th sortie, on the 75th air bombing that he was doing, he was shot down over Hanoi, and he was put in prison. He was a prisoner of war. He was tortured for over 2,100 days. He was tortured for 5 long years. And finally, he was lucky to be alive, and he came back to America after the war. And he was a hero because he survived the war. And he was shot down, and he became a public speaker, and he began speaking all over America. One night, he was in a restaurant in Kansas City. He's sitting alone, and he sees another guy at a table is staring at him. Now, it's very uncomfortable when somebody is staring at you. He didn't know who that fellow was, but that fellow was just staring at him. And finally, the fellow who was doing the staring comes over to him and says, "You're Captain Plumb, right?" He says, "Yes, sir. How do you know that?" He said, "You were on the Kitty Hawk, weren't you?" He says, "Yes, sir. But how do you know that?" He said, "You were shot down over Hanoi, weren't you?" He says, "Yes, sir. But how do you know that?" He said, "And your parachute opened up over Hanoi, and you were able to land safely. It's true, you were a prisoner of war, but you landed safely." He says, "How do you know all this?" The man says, "Because I packed your parachute. I was the one who built your parachute. I was the one who was on that Kitty Hawk who built those parachutes that saved your life." Well, Captain Plumb could not believe it. And he said to him, "I want you to know that I have said so many prayers for your welfare. I never thought that I would meet you. And I can't thank you enough, because it's only because of what you did with your capable hands that my life was saved." And he goes out of the restaurant, and he writes, and you can look it up online and you'll see, he writes that he was depressed. And you know why he was depressed? He said, "How many times on that ship did I see that sailor? I must have seen him dozens of times. I never said hello to him." You know why? Because I was a jet fighter pilot. He was only a simple sailor. But he packed my parachute. And because he packed my parachute, he deserved that I should say hello to him, that I should give him recognition. And he brings out from that a great lesson. There are many people who pack your parachute in life. Your Rebbe, your parents, your good friends, and we never recognize them. We take it for granted. And we have to change from tonight. That's part of Dibur Chaverim, a friend who does something for you, who makes you feel special, who spends an extra time to explain to you the Tosfos, or gets you involved in a group of chaverim that you would not have gotten involved. And for those listening, the men, somebody who gives you an opportunity to have a job, somebody who gives you that shidduch, they packed your parachute. And you know, for years, I heard this story, and I never was able to get a Jewish spin on it. And so I didn't want to print it, because I didn't want to print a story about people that were not Yidden. But then I remembered something, and I checked this out with somebody here. It is absolutely incredible. Listen to this. When I was your age, I was in high school, and my father, Olav Shalom, he used to go to a shir once a week that was given by Rabbi Yosher Ber Soloveitchik in Manhattan. Rabbi Yoshua Ber was an absolute genius. And all the Rabbonim from his organization, they would all come, they would listen to a shir for an hour in Gemara, and then for 15 minutes he would talk drush, and all the rabbis had drushes for their Shabbos, drushes. They all came, it was great. Rabbi Yoshua Ber was a genius, it was always interesting. One night my father says to me, you got to go hear a shir. You got to come with me to hear a shir of Rabbi Yoshua Ber. Okay, I said, I'll go. I went with my grandfather and my father. I remember it was Masechta Megillah. I don't remember what daf. But I will never, ever forget the vort that he said that night. And for years I wondered if it was really true in nature what he said. And I found out last year from a guy, Danny Center, who has a brother, Rabbi Ari Center, who's a Rav here in Muncie. And it's mamish true, and you'll see something in a minute that is out of this world. It was Parshas Vayishlach. And in Parshas Vayishlach, it says like this, Vatomos Devoira Meinekes Rivka. It's in Perik Lamed Hei, Pasik Ches and Tes, if you want to look it up. Devoira died. Who was she? She was the nursemaid of Rivka. And then Yaakov gives her a hesped. He calls the place Aloin Bochus, the area of crying. And then it says, Vayera Alekim al Yaakov, Hashem appeared to Yaakov. First of all, what's the connection that Hashem appeared to Yaakov after this hesped? And who is this Dvaira? Why is all of a sudden is Yaakov giving a hesped on Dvaira? Who is she? And Rabbi Yoshua Ber said an amazing thing. And he said like this, the word Dvaira means a bee. Now, a honeybee flies over many, many flowers, but it only lands on the flower from which it can draw nectar. That's what I wanted to find out if this is really true. And Danny Center, who raises, he's got 80,000 bees. That's one of his hobbies. And he told me that's exactly true. The honey bee does not land on a flower unless it knows that it can draw nectar from. Said Rabbi Yoshua Ber, Devoira, she was a nursemaid. She was in a house of Rishayim, Lavan, Bsuel, but she didn't have anything to do with them. She had to do with Rivka. She was the Menekes of Rivka. She raised Rivka. And Yaakov realized that this mother that he had was special because this woman, Devoira, packed her parachute. He was the one, she was the one who raised Rivka and made her special. That's why the Ramban says on the Pasuk, Yaakov took Devoira, who was an elderly woman already, and he took her along because he knew that he had a mother like that only because Devoira packed her parachute. And that's the Yiddish understanding of what Captain Plum is talking about. And I think that we have to begin making a dogosh chazak on the Indian of Akoras HaToiv. That's part of Dibuk Haverim. Many people do us favors and we take it for granted. Parents work so hard for us, you'll never know what it means, how your father or your mother is concerned for you until you have children. And then you'll say, oh my, I can't believe that's what they did for me. That's what happens. We take it for granted. You think a Rebbe just comes and gives a shir? He prepares hours and hours how to explain it, how to say it over. And in the English teachers as well, it just doesn't happen that they just come to class. You have to have a chorus, I tell you, for anybody who's doing anything for you, anybody who's packing any type of parachute for you. That's what it's all about. If you take a look in Perik Vav of Ovis, there's a beautiful introduction in a sefer which is called the Medrash Shmuel, but he's really, the Yochanan Boyas is writing it. And he writes that these days are very holy, special days because these are the days that Hashem raised the level of Klal Yisrael from Memtes Shari Tuma all the way that they were able to be Makabel the Torah and they could hear Hashem's voice, Kavayachal, to hear two of the Aseres HaDibrois. They had to hear the other ones from Moshe Rabbeinu. They couldn't listen anymore to Hashem. They were too frightened. But imagine, in these 49 days, this is when we have to elevate ourselves in Avas HaTorah and Avodah Shebelev and Tefillah. So I want to tell you something about Avas HaTorah. I just had this chus literally yesterday to make a certain video. Now, there is someone who has finished a video on Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel. All of you know Rav Nosson Tzvi was just the most incredible human being. He's a person who grew up in Chicago. If you would take a look at his yearbook, that's my favorite picture of all pictures. One of my favorite pictures. You take a look at him, he's got a nice chup. He's a basketball player. He's a tall, handsome guy. He's a president of the student council, head of the basketball team. And he became the greatest Rosh Yeshiva who built the biggest yeshiva in the world. He was a regular American boy. As a matter of fact, I know people who were in his class. They used to call him Nady. Nosson Tzvi was Nady. His father was a caterer. He was a regular guy, just like all of us. Just like everybody else in America. And now, after he passed away, and he was so beloved by his Talmidim, he was so beloved by all who knew him, so they made this fabulous video. The video is about 50 minutes. And they asked me if I would watch the video and then just make another video that's going to follow that and say to everyone who has watched this video, what do we learn from what we just saw in these 50 minutes about the life of Rav Nosson Tzvi? And on that video was something that he told me personally. Now, I have, Baruch Hashem, two sons. Both of them learned in Mir. Two of my three sons-in-laws learned in Mir. So every time I went to Mir, I always went to speak to Rav Nosson Tzvi. And he was very, very warm to me, like he was to everybody else. I'll never forget one Shabbos morning, I was davening in Yerushalayim, and he invited me. He said, why don't you come with me for Kiddush? We'll come to my son-in-law's house. We'll have Kiddush together. We had davened someplace in Ramat Eshkol. I come to the house, and he starts telling me this story, how he became who he became. He was a high school boy. And one day his Zaidi said to him, I want to take you to Eretz Yisrael. I'm going to take you on a trip to Eretz Yisrael. I want you to meet my brother. That's what his Zaidi, Rav Nosson Tzvi, said to him. Who was his Zaidi's brother? Rav Lezer Yudel Finkel, the Rosh Hashiva of Mir. Well, he comes to Mir and he meets this big tzaddik. And this big tzaddik falls in love with his great nephew. And he just cannot get over him. And he sees that this kid has a future. How Rav Lezer Yudel saw it, it's impossible to know. This was a regular American boy. And he said to him, you must come back when you graduate high school. You've got to come back. First of all, he wanted him to stay, but he couldn't stay. And he said, you got to promise me you're going to come back. And sure enough, after high school, he told me his mother offered him a white Cadillac if he didn't go to Eretz Yisrael. Rav Nosson Tzvi told it to me. That's not on the video. He told me that his mother was, she didn't want that he should go back to Eretz Yisrael because she knew if he goes, he's never coming back. She's a wonderful lady, Mrs. Sarah Finkel. I can't say I'm a good friend, but we're very, very friendly. I always go to see her. We email. She's incredible. But she let him go. Now listen to this. He was coming from Chicago. He certainly didn't have the level of learning that they had in Mir. So he told me that Rav Lezer Yudel got for him three rebbes. Each of the rebbes learned with him, listen to this, the first 60 blot in Bava Kama. Each of the rebbes learned it with him twice. So those first 60 blot of Bava Kama from the beginning till Merubah, he learned six times, two times with each rebbe. Then Rav Nosson Tzvi says on the video, which he told me, that besides those six times, he chazered it seven times. So he learned the first 60 blot of Bava Kama 13 times. He says on the video, Bava Kama to him was one of his easiest mesechtos. Of course, if you'd learned something 13 times, you'd also know it backwards and forwards. But what's not on the video, and what he told me, was the most incredible thing. He said this was one of the changing points of his life. Rav Lezer Yudel wanted that he should stay in his house and sleep in his house because he didn't want him to be in the regular dormitory with all the boys that were on a much, much higher level than him. He knew that he would get there eventually, but right now he wanted him in his home. So he told me that he was sleeping and then he got up and he saw that Rav Lezer Yudel is getting up to learn. Now Rav Lezer Yudel didn't realize that Nosson Tzvi was up. So he was there in his shirt sleeves. And he sees, Rav Nosson Tzvi sees, how Rav Lezer Yudel goes over to the shelves of the Svarim and he puts his hands around the Svarim and he bends down and he kisses them and he says, good morning. He said, that Avas HaTorah, that love of Svarim, that love of Shas that Rabbi Eliezer Yudel felt that he didn't know his great nephew was watching it. He said, when I saw that's how my great uncle starts his day, kissing the Svarim, embracing them, and saying good morning, I'm going to be a Ben Torah for the rest of my life. But you know what I can't get over is the Chazara aspect of it. That's what I think is one of the things that we have to learn. You know, Rabbi Aaron Kotler writes in the Mishnas Rabbi Aaron from the Vilna Gaon that this is such an important element of Avas HaTorah. If you love something, you want to retain it. And he writes, "Kamoy shekosav hagra b'mishle kama pa'amim ki toiv sheyoida al boirov." It's better that a person should know mesechtes achodais. It's better you should know a few mesechtes very well. Mishiyil mod harbe v'lo yoda. That the person has learned so much, but he really doesn't know it. He doesn't retain it. It's better to learn one mesechta 10 times, like Rav Nosson Tzvi, and it becomes yours. And that's really what Avas HaTorah is. If you love something, you want it to become part of you. And it could only become part of you through Chazara. And maybe that's one of the things that we have to develop in these 49 days as we come towards Shavuos. The Avas HaTorah to retain the Torah. Not only learning. Of course, it's exciting always to learn new stuff. But if you learn something over and over, and each time you see something new, and it becomes part of you, that's what Rav Nosson Tzvi wanted. That's how he became as great as he became. And that's what Rav Aaron is telling us. That's what the Goyen did as well. But I brought a gift for all of you. And I want to tell you something that's very, very dear to my heart. And very painful to talk about. One of the things that Yochanan Boaz writes about is he writes about Avodah. And we know that the Gemara tells us in Tainus, Dav Beis Amar Aleph, Ezehi Avodah Shebelev, Heva Oimezu Tefillah. You know, one of the saddest things that ever happened this past year when 3 boys, Naftali, Gilad, and Ayal, were kidnapped. Boys your age, teenage kids coming home from yeshiva. I always wondered, why did Hashem make it that for 18 days, none of us knew what was going on with these kids? For 18 days, I will never forget, I was in Zurich in Switzerland, Friday night, when still nobody knew what was going on with the boys. Nobody knew where they were. I was in a Hasidic shul, it's called Erika Shul. Everybody with a shtreimel, upturned hat, gartel, I was the only one that looked like me. Totally different than everybody. But then the Gabbai got up, and right before Kabbalah Shabbos, he said, Rabbi, say, now we're going to say Tillim for the 3 boys. And the Tillim that was said was so incredible, I started crying. I couldn't believe. It was as if these Hasidic guys, if it was their own child. I couldn't get over it. And you know why I couldn't get over it? Because I realized that 3 weeks before that, if these Hasidic people would have seen those 3 kids would keep us rugot, living in areas where we don't usually live, going to yeshivas where we don't usually go to. They wouldn't even look at them. But now that they were in trouble, we were all in it together. And Hashem created an achdus and klal yisrael that hasn't been like this in 50 years. And that's why, in my humble opinion, there were thousands of rockets by Hamas, yimach shemam. Not one of them killed anybody. How could, logically, it doesn't make sense. It just, how could that possibly be? How could you shoot thousands and thousands of rockets? One kid in Ashdod was killed from shrapnel. It doesn't make sense, but I believe this was because of the tefillah of the achdus of Klal Yisrael. So listen to this. You mamash have to hold on to your seatbelts, what you're going to hear now. When they found out what happened, I know somebody who went to be Menachem Mavel, Mrs. Frankel, Naftali's mother. And she said at the Shiva, she said that she had a partial nechama. And people were wondering, how could she have a partial nechama? She lost a teenage child. What kind of consolation could she possibly have? And she said, for 18 days, I cried. I didn't know what happened to my son. I didn't know what condition he was in. But I knew that my son loved doing mitzvahs. And the mitzvah that he loved to do more than anything else was tefillin. And I knew those terrorists, yimach shemam, there was no way they were going to let him wear tefillin. But when I found out that he was killed the first day, I had a partial nechama because I felt at least my son didn't go one day without wearing tefillin. Could you imagine a mother saying that? Imagine a mother feeling a consolation her son didn't go one day without wearing tefillin. When I heard that, I felt that every Yid has to make a certain Kabbalah in a Zahirus of tefillin. Not talking during, while we're wearing tefillin, okay, that would be the ideal. But Chas v'Shalom, not to text, not to read an email. I don't know what the policy of the yeshiva is, whether high school guys have cell phones or not during davening. But I can tell you there are men, the second they finish Shemoneh Esrei, before Kedusha, they're on their iPhones. Maybe Staples sent them an ad. Maybe somebody wants to be connected to LinkedIn. They're sick. Their mom is sick and addicted to their cell phones. And so therefore, I felt that we have to make a new Kabbalah in Klal Yisrael. And me and two other fellows, we came up with this slogan, disconnect to reconnect. And somebody made me this poster. Disconnect to reconnect. Now, this is a Sfarzida, but I guarantee you it works for Ashkenaz as well. Disconnect. It's not enough from now on, from Ma'ariv on tonight, that your phone should be on vibrate. It's not enough. You have to disconnect. And don't tell me you're going to put the phone in a cubby hole. That's good, but it's not enough. You know why? Because when you go to a show that doesn't have a cubby, so then you're not going to disconnect. It'll just be on vibrate. And you're going to want to see what it is. And then when I told this to people, a fellow, a Rebbe in Darkei Torah, Yaron Halbertal, told me something. I lost my breath. Do you know that the word Naftali is the Oisiyos Tefillin? Could you believe that? Nun, Pei, Tof, Lamed, Yud is Tof, Pei, Lamed, Yud, Nun. And when I heard that, I decided that's it. Everybody, we all have to change. We want to make a Kabbalah to come closer to Hashem. So I brought for all of you, this tzaddik is going to give him out to everyone. Take this sticker tonight. Put it in your sitter. Put it on your shtender. Take a second one, put it in your house on a refrigerator. Whether it's your mother, your sister, your father, your brother, everybody. We have to disconnect to reconnect to Hashem. Because if we're worried who's calling, then that's not a davening. Then your focus is not on Torah. Your focus is not on the tefillah. I just want to end. I know that we have to daven Ma'ariv, and I still have another speech tonight. So I just want to end with something. This is literally the greatest story you'll ever hear in your life. One of them, for sure. I have the great chutz to travel many places. One of the places that I love to travel is South Africa. I'm sure in another Gilgal I was a South African. I'm telling you, their accent and their hearts, there's nobody like a South African. The Bali Tshuva from South Africa are the greatest. So there's a young Rav who is now the chief rabbi. His name is Rabbi Warren Goldstein. And he has something called Sinai in Daba. Sinai in Daba is a conference for everybody. And they talk about important things of Yiddishkeit. And 2 years ago, they had a conference like that. And he asked me to be one of the 8 speakers. One of the other 8 speakers was going to be Rabbi Beryl Wein, who used to live here in Muncie. And Rabbi Goldstein, who asked me to speak, said, on Motzei Shabbos, you'll be one of the speakers. And then Sunday, there'll be many, many different sessions. Please come and interview me and Rabbi Wein, because we just wrote a book about Lithuanian Jewry. It's called The Legacy. And I told him I would be very happy to do that. And sure enough, on Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock session, there were 500 people. I mean, there were 4,000 people at the whole thing. But every session had so many different people. So I was interviewing Rabbi Wein and Rabbi Goldstein. And there was a question that I've been meaning to ask Rabbi Wein for years. And I waited until there were 5 minutes left into the session. And I said to him, Rabbi Wein, I'd like to ask you a question that's been bothering me for 40 years. He looks at me, 40 years? I said, yeah, 40 years. I said, 40 years ago, you were over Miami in a big shul. And you called me before the last days of Yontif of Pesach. You needed a male to come down to do a bris. And you asked me if I'd come to be in your community and to spend Yontif with you. And I did, and it was wonderful. I said, Rabbi Wein, but then when it came to Ma'ariv, Motzei Yontif, I looked around at the big shul, and I noticed, Rabbi Wein, you're the only one without a suntan. You never go out. You're always writing, whether it's books, making CDs, newsletters, svarim, books. It's amazing. Rabbi Wein, you have done more in 40 years than companies have done. Don't you ever get tired? You never stop. How do you do it? And he got very serious and he said, I want to tell you a story that happened to me when I was 11 years old. It's 1946. He said, when I was 11 years old, I was growing up in Chicago. And one day my father says to me, we're going to the airport. I said, why are we going to the airport? He said, you know why? Because there's a great tzaddik, Rabbi Isaac Halevi Herzog, is coming and he's going to speak to the Rabbanim in Chicago and to all the yeshiva bachrim. And we went to the airport and we greeted him and he came to a shul. The shul was packed with Rabbanim. There were 200 yeshiva bachrim. It was 1946, so it's not like today. There would have been thousands. They were mostly from the Skokie yeshiva. And the Rav gave a shir. And after Rabbi Isaac Halevi Herzog gave a shir, he said, now I want to talk to all of you, the Bachrim, especially. And he said like this, I just got back from Rome. I just got back from visiting the Pope. It was Pope Pius, Yimach Shemoy. And he said, I said to the Pope, I've got the names of 10,000 Jewish boys and girls. These are our children and you have them. Your people have them. Give me back these children. These are our children. And the Pope said, I can't give you back even one of them. And he said, why not? These are our kids. Many of them, we gave them to you because we didn't think we would survive the war. And many of them, your people kidnapped from us. And the Pope said, we have a law that if a child is baptized, we cannot give him back to any religion. And every single one of these kids have been baptized. And Rabbi Isaac Halevi Herzog said, I pleaded, I begged him, please give me back. These are our children. And he wouldn't budge. And suddenly Rabbi Wein said, Rabbi Isaac Halevi Herzog started crying. He put his head down on the shtender and he just wept and cried. And everybody was quiet, just listening to him cry because he couldn't help those 10,000 kids. And Rabbi Wein said, when he lifted up his head, his face was red. He looked like a lion. And he said, I can't do anything anymore for those 10,000 kids. But what are you going to do for the future children of Klal Yisrael? Are you going to remember what I said? Don't ever forget what I said. What are you going to do to save the future children of Klal Yisrael? And then he sat down and everybody went up to shake his hand. And Rabbi Wein said, I still don't know till this day. But when he took my hand, he looked me straight in the face. And he said, are you going to remember what I said? Don't ever forget what I said. Remember, what are you going to do for the children of Klal Yisrael? And Rabbi Wein said, every time I want to put my head down, every time I want to put my pen down, I'm haunted by those words. What are you going to do for the children of Klal Yisrael? And that's the question we ask tonight to all the boys in Or Reuven. You have the greatest staff in the world. Rabbi Radinsky, Rabbi Medetsky, Rabbi Brody, Rabbi Bamberger, all the others, fabulous people. There's no yeshiva like this in the world. But it's not only a privilege to be here, it's a responsibility. You're the representatives. You're the ones that have to save the future children of Klal Yisrael. And if you take these days of Achana between Pesach and Shavuos and understand that there has to be an Avas HaTorah, there has to be a Dibuch HaVeirim, there has to be Avodah Shebelev of Tefillah, there has to be an Achrayas to the Klal, then we can get to Shechiyonu. Then we can get to Shavuos and say the Shechiyonu properly. David should help that all of us should be able to grow and fulfill our potential and be the Yidden that Hashem wants us to be. Thank you for inviting me and thank you for listening.
TorahAnytime.com sends cameras out day and night to video and audio record the best Torah classes around. We then make them available to you for free. So what are you waiting for? Watch, listen to, and download lectures on TorahAnytime.com today.